Hi, this is Mark Brax, MotoGP's Pit Lane Commentator, and you're listening to the 100th episode of MotoGP OD. All the best, Bob, and all the best for another 100 episodes. Cheers.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, October 19th, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, and this is episode number 100, the big ton. Yeah, you would insert sound effects here if I cared enough to find all those sound effects. Maybe I shouldn't say that I cared enough, but if I had time enough. But I figured that rather than me rummaging around our computer for these sound effects and stuff, which I'm sure I have, I'd rather spend the time talking to you guys and recording stuff about MotoGP and all of that goodness. So we got a super gigantic show today. It's really, really big. People were asking me, probably like 15 weeks ago, I had some emails. Hey, you got episode number 100 coming up. What are you going to do? And I literally sort of had no idea. I was kind of thinking, well, you know, it's really kind of just another episode in a lot of ways, and in a lot of ways it is. But it turned out to be a big one because I got some suggestions. I had a lot of things sort of came together all at the same time as well. And so we've got some good stuff going on. We've got some reader email that I'm going to take care of. We've got some news, of course. We always have the news. We have a couple of little mini interviews with some MotoGP celebrities that I think you guys will like. And then we have a really long conversation with myself and Jules Cisek, a.k.a. Pop Monkey. That's also really good stuff. Basically, mostly a follow-up to the Phillip Island Grand Prix that we had last weekend, a discussion of tire rules, just sort of an all-around big, long, giant MotoGP chat. I thought it came out pretty good. It is long, but it's good stuff. And we're going to do that, and then we're going to finish up with a real, real quick Malaysia preview because we don't want to keep everybody waiting forever about everything. And like I said, the show is going to run long, but it's going to be a good one. And because it is episode one, number 100, why don't we go ahead and start off with the thank yous very much for some donations that we had this week, because that's really, really cool. I do appreciate it, you guys out there. We had a donation from Kevin Whitaker. This is second time. Thanks a lot, Kevin. Good stuff. Len Padilla out of Spain was kind enough to donate to the show. Kirk Erlinger, George Mitchell, James Harriger, and then in our podium club, Brent Morgan, who is a very, very generous donation. And all these donations do help me out a lot, folks. I pay the Skype bills with them. I pay the hosting bills with them. I buy equipment with them. I pay for magazine subscriptions, all sort of stuff. I even pay for beer. But in one way or the other, I think that all of the donations go towards making the podcast better, even if that is paying for beer. Because quite honestly, a little bit of beer makes the podcast go better. Long-time listeners might remember back, I used to write out the show, and I would actually read the stories and all of that, and it would just be me, and I'd be reading the stories, and I was going for that. I was going for this very NPR sort of sound, because it's really difficult to just get up here and start talking and sound coherent and all of that sort of thing. However, in the last few months, I've sort of discovered a new method, and that's have a few beers beforehand, and hey, look at that. I can talk. So, moving on. Thanks a lot, guys. Do appreciate that. Great donations. It's really, really cool stuff. The next cool thing, and this is kind of an ego boost for Bob, and unfortunately, I haven't actually got the magazine in my hands yet because I think the mailman is reading it at lunch or something, and he's been hanging on to it. But Jim Race told me about it, and I went to the online site for Road Racer X magazine, which if you don't get Road Racer X, you really got to get this magazine. It's one of the, you know, it's relatively inexpensive sort of a thing. Off the top of my head, I don't know the subscription prices. It's probably about $20 if you're in the United States. Whatever it is, go to roadracerx.com, subscribe to this magazine. If you like road racing, you will like Road Racer X. Beautiful photography, very slick magazine, very well produced, lots of great interviews, lots of great articles, all kinds of good stuff, lots of great pictures of pretty girls. We all like that. Everything's in there. It's a good magazine. But the most important thing that's in the edition of November, December 2007 on page 108 in their AV roundup, you'll find a little thing about podcasts, and MotoGPOD is the first podcast on the list. So, you know, we're in print now. This is really cool. Like I said, it's a huge ego boost for me, and I'm going to go ahead and read the piece, which I'm sure is a giant copyright infringement, and hopefully Chris Johnham and the rest of the staff there at Road Racer X Magazine won't come after me, but here we go. Bob Hayes' Road Racing Podcast was the first one I happened across a couple of years ago, and although it lacks some of the flash of better-funded operations, it still represents what I think is so cool about the internet, namely that a hardcore fan with a bit of technical prowess and a willingness to work hard can put together his very own radio show. Far from being a hokey blowhard, Hayes is humble and deferential in his interviews, but his passion for the sport is obvious from his interesting insights. He doesn't always have access to the biggest names, but his regulars, including American Premec Dantin technician Liam Schubert, have good personalities and they're fun to listen to. Hayes knows his audience well, so he doesn't concern himself too much with his show lengths, which we'll see today. Instead, giving thorough race reports and letting interviews follow their natural paths. The result is typically a lengthy program that will keep road race crazy enthusiasts entertained for quite some time. And MotoGPOD has about the coolest podcast name out there. To enjoy the original motorcycle podcast, visit www.motogpod.com. So thanks very much to Road Racer X Magazine for my first known mention in a large circulation print magazine. I'm pretty proud of that, actually. I really am. It's kind of cool stuff. It's a little bit, it's pretty cool. I'm going to run out and buy, you know, 5 copies for my mother. And if you catch that reference, then that means you're old just like me and you listened to Dr. Hook when you were a little kid. Why don't we move on to some reader email? I've got quite a lot of it here. It's been stacking up. I've got a couple of things that I saved for a week or two, a couple of things that came in at the last minute, all sorts of good stuff. Let's start off with some newsy kind of stuff. And this was sent in by listener Yoshi Uchiyama in Japan. And he brought to my attention something that I had overlooked because I've been kind of busy lately. But this was on the MotoGP regular website where they have the daily news emails. And if you don't get that, go to MotoGP.com and you can sign up and they'll send you an email, you know, headlines of the day. And you click on the link and you get to read the little story and all that good stuff. One of the things that they're talking about is that Nobby Aoki will be giving a sneak peek into the future when he begins practice for the Polynya Malaysian Grand Prix. The Japanese rider making his first appearance of the year in a MotoGP race will be using a prototype of the 2008 GSVR 800 alongside regular Suzuki riders John Hopkins and Chris Vermeulen, who will both be on board the current model. So Aoki's going to ride the 2008 Suzuki in the Malaysian Grand Prix. That's kind of cool stuff. They're having a wild card rider. We like that. That's one cool thing about the Asian Grand Prix and the Australian Grand Prix and stuff is that the Japanese factories tend to bring out their wild cards. Now, a further interesting little tidbit about this whole story is that on Monday, they're going to be doing some testing at Malaysia, and none other than AMA Superbike champion Ben Spies is going to get a ride on that same bike. So he's going to be given a chance to ride the Suzuki GSVR 800 for the first time in just a few days in a special test opportunity given to him by the Japanese factory. On the Monday following the Polynya Malaysian Motorcycle Grand Prix, Ben Spies will put on his leathers and try his hand on the 800cc machine. And Paul Denning, Suzuki MotoGP team manager, spoke in the pre-event press conference about the decision to give the American a trial run on this year's model used by John Hopkins and Chris Vermeulen. It's Ben's first time riding at Sepang and also his first time with the GSVR 800. Difficult to say whether he will be here in MotoGP eventually, but he wants to give it a go and he seems to have got over his fear of flying to come over to Malaysia. I think that Suzuki would like to bring through their own riders as they did with Kevin Schwantz. So on that fear of flying comment, if you don't know, Ben Spies hates flying, which is a characteristic that he shares with certainly with Rossi's dad, who won't even go see Rossi's flyaway races because of his hatred of flying so much. And it's kind of interesting that these motorcycle riders who are out there risking death and all of that sort of thing at 200 plus miles an hour, and they don't like flying. So I'm not making fun of Ben. You know, I can respect that. I'm not a big particular fan of flying myself either. But in any event, I'm really glad that he's jumping on an airplane for a really long flight over there to Malaysia. And he's going to give it a go on Monday. And also, good luck to Nobuatsu Aoki in the Malaysian Grand Prix. And sorry so much for massacring the pronunciation of your name. Apparently, we may have had a little bit too much beer. I was told that my last episode's beer to chatter ratio, whatever, was a little bit off, and it might be in that case this show as well. Okay, moving on. Next email, and this is some other good stuff. This one came from Rob Campbell. He sent me this one a little while ago, and I've kind of been holding it in the bag for some time or another. And since this is episode number 100, and I can pretty much do what I want because it's my birthday, and I'll cry if I want to. So we're going to make it as long as possible by reading all these emails and having all this good stuff and conversations with Jules and everything else. So in any case, Rob Campbell has an opinion about Formula One in the United States versus MotoGP. And I thought this was a pretty cool email. I really did. That's why I saved it. It just didn't kind of fit into last week's episode. And he says, Rob says, I am probably in that percentage of Americans that has not watched MotoGP until now. I think that Formula One is more popular because of a type of recognition factor. Maybe more people know how to drive cars than motorcycles, and therefore they're more inclined to watch four-wheel motorsports than two-wheel motorsports. I've had a dirt bike all my life. May 2006, I bought my first sport bike, first street bike ever. While researching how to ride, books, and things like that, MotoGP popped up. I started watching the races mostly for learning purposes, reading about the riders, and so on and so forth. Now I'm a full-blown MotoGP junkie. Now, had I been more keen on MotoGP earlier, perhaps even before I had my first sport bike, then I would have watched and I would have become a fan earlier, than being a motorcycle fan. Oh, sorry, Rob's email is a little bit stumbly there. I think I knew about road racing of some type, but I never really knew about and what MotoGP is and was. It just seems that if you don't look for it, you probably won't even know about it, at least in the United States. Anyways, that's how I found out about MotoGP, and maybe it's a similar thing for other Americans and the unfamiliarity with the sport versus F1. And the thing is about this email and why I wanted to read it is this is exactly what I think. And I've said this before, and it's so true now. People tend to watch stuff that they can do, hence the popularity of golf on TV, which is about as interesting as watching the grass grow. But a lot of people play golf, so they like to watch golf. Now, most motorcycle racing fans also happen to be motorcyclists, so they like to watch guys doing something that they do only about 100 times better. And I think that's so very, very, very true. And in the United States, at least, you're never going to get MotoGP up to the popularity of, say, something like NASCAR or something until you have that many motorcyclists. And that's not too likely to happen. So in one way to look at it, we're real safe. MotoGP is not going to turn into NASCAR. However, MotoGP is becoming more popular in the United States. And an interesting thing, I saw a lot of cruisers down there at Laguna Seca when I was down there last year. Instead of just the sporty bike crowd, which is sort of a natural thing to like motorcycle racing, you're also getting mainstream-ish, in the United States at least, motorcycle riders who tend to be riding, you know, sort of cruisers and things like that, because this is what they know. You know, they say, I'm going to go buy a motorcycle. That means in their head, a Harley Davidson or a Japanese clone of a Harley Davidson. However, once they see somebody riding a sport bike around a track at that kind of insane speeds and all that, they're interested. They may not run out and buy a sport bike, but it's something that they can connect to. And I really do think that that has a big difference. And I think the factories realize this too. And that's why when you watch motorcycle racing, a lot of the advertisements that you see are from motorcycle factories. I mean, these guys aren't stupid. They know that the motorcycle racing fans are going to be likely motorcycle buyers. Race on Sunday, sell on Monday. It's an old adage, and it's true. And I do think that Rob's exactly right. That's probably why Formula One is as, you know, comparatively more popular than it is than compared to MotoGP. Even though people don't drive an open-wheeled car, they do drive a car with four wheels, and, you know, they can envision themselves, you know, now I'm Fernando Alonso going around this corner and all that kind of business. You know what I'm saying? And it's not like you exactly think that you're going to be able to do as well as Fernando Alonso. That's probably why you're watching it, is that you know you can't ride a motorcycle like Casey Stoner, but It's really cool to see him do it. And you know the feeling that you have when you go around that corner and you're wondering to yourself, does Casey Stoner also think that? You know, is this running through his head, or is he just such a natural that it's not? So I think that brings up an excellent point, and that is pretty much, you know, Rob agreed with me. So I read his email. What the hell, right? But in any event, thanks very much for the email, Rob, and welcome aboard as a MotoGP fan, because all the fans we have, that's better stuff, and maybe we'll finally get some better coverage. Next email that we got, and this one's kind of a humorous one. This is from Terry James, and he writes about MotoGP mysteries. And I thought this one was kind of funny, and I'm going to just read a couple of these. He made several points in here, but he's sort of saying, John Hopkins, what exactly does he listen to before each race when he's rocking out with his headphones on? Maybe switching over to some Gordon Lightfoot would instead help him win the race. And that's kind of mean, but kind of funny there, Terry. Randy Dupuis, the first MotoGP racer ever to pose in Playgirl. I'm thinking that Grace would like that. And let's see what else we got. Danny Pedrosa, how come his umbrella girl is usually a dude? I think that's a friend or a manager or something along those lines. But it is kind of an interesting question there. So thanks very much, Terry, for that email there. Now, last email, and this one writes, or actually it's three emails, and this one wins the award for incoherent and most likely drunk email of the week. And these all came from the same email address through the contact form at MotoGPOD.com, which you are more than welcome to go visit. MotoGPOD.com, there's a little form, says contact, you can find it on the left side, blah, blah, blah. And these emails came from Nathan and Jimmy, and I got two copies of one, and this is before the tire rule thing sort of got shut down, and it says, boo to the new KNEW tire rule. We want it to stay the way it is now. We like the tire war. If you go to a one tire rule, it makes it too risky to pass someone, and it's also boring to look at F1 and World Superbikes. Boring. Then there's another email that says the tire rule should stay. A lot of people like the tire war. It makes it more interesting for the race. The tire rule should stay. A lot of people like the tire war. It makes it more interesting for the race. Literally, this is how the email is reading. But we are so sick of watching Rossi with an E. That's all you want to watch on camera. Anyway, if the Michelin with two L's riders want to go to a better tire, then they should change to a different brand. Which Jimmy and Nathan, if only it was that easy. If it's better, the option should be there for all riders to change brands. Good point. That's better. And not just one tire. That's crap. Blah, 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 blah. So whatever. Thank you very much, Jimmy and Nathan. I tried to email you back like I do with every email just to say, you know, hey, thanks. Got your email. It's cool. I'm glad you listened to the show and all that. And the email bounced. So I'm not making fun of you, even though I am. But you guys do win the sort of incoherent email of the week award. And it was cool. It was entertaining. I enjoyed it. And I think everybody else is somewhat enjoying it as well. So why don't we finish up with this long, rambling, semi-beery sort of intro and get on with the rest of the show.
Hi, this is Chris Johnham, editor of Road Racer X, and I'd just like to congratulate Bob on his 100th episode of the original MotoGP podcast.
Hello, Toby. Hope I'm not interrupting anything. I just got off Phillip Island, quite busy, and I know that. I saw Nikki Hayden there, looked quite a bit miffed.
Yeah, Nikki was pretty miffed at that. I felt more than sorry for him. I mean, if we hadn't have ever had Ezreal last year, then obviously that would be about the most angry we've ever seen him. He was very, 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 very miffed, to say the least, without saying a rude word. We caught up with him after the race, and he had a chance. Whether or not he could have beaten Stoner is another matter, but he would have been second. No problem at all, in my book at least. So, shame. Shame. And, you know, some stupid vow. But as he said to me over breakfast this morning, he had a problem with his clutch during the morning warm-up in Australia, and therefore, he had to use his number two bike for the remainder of the 20-odd minute warm-up on Sunday morning. So, swings and roundabouts, had that bike, you know, not had the clutch problem, then maybe the engine would have failed in the warm-up. Do you see what I mean?
Indeed, I do. All right, Toby, I do appreciate it, and looking forward to Malaysia and all of that. So, have a have a good couple of, well, about a day you have, I suppose, don't you? And then you have to get to work.
Yes. Yes. But,
yeah. So, all right. And again, do appreciate it. And thanks a lot.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
See
you. Bye. Thank you, Toby, for your patience. When I called Toby, he sounded like he might have woken up from a nap or something. It was midday in Malaysia, but with the schedule that these guys have, I'm sure he was probably catching up a little bit on his one day off, and here I am bothering him to try to get a little sound bite for my 100th episode. But he was a nice enough guy to sort of turn it into a mini interview, and his comments on Nikki were so great, I figured I'd want to include them, so there they are.
This is David Emmett Kropotkin from MotoGPMatters.com. Congratulations on doing the ton, as old British bikers used to say, and thanks for keeping us informed and entertained. Here's to the next 100.
All right, we got Chuck Axelin from Team KR on the phone. How are you doing today, Chuck?
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. It's early in the morning here in Malaysia, but I'm up and running around, so and it's sunny outside, so it's so far so good.
So far so good. Looking like we're going to have nice weather over there in Malaysia?
Well, here you never really know because of the humidity. It seems like... you know, every day this time of year, about 2:30, the clouds start billowing and the thunder starts, lightning starts rumbling, and you know, it could do anything. As you know, we've seen that many times. So it'll be good hot weather for part of the day, and you know, monsoon type rain for the other part of the day. So we'll just have to see how the weekend goes.
Okay, yeah, well, we're holding out for a good one. I know you had some weird weather conditions going on at Phillip Island, particularly at on Friday.
Mm. Yeah, Friday in Phillip Island was quite, pretty dramatic there with the wind blowing and the temperature was cold, and it seemed like, you know, the rain would come and it actually dries out quite quick. So the rain would come and then it would be dry in the next 10 minutes, and you just as soon as you got everything set up to go back out again, it would start raining again. So it was pretty crazy, but I think the main thing that's the biggest danger there is the wind. You know, the crosswinds kind of, you know, especially with the 125s and that. You know, we work with Stevie Bonzi, and I know it was quite scary for him coming, you know, down the front straight into turn one a few times, and you know, the wind kind of gets under your fairing and feels like it's going to take the front wheel out. But that's something that's, you know, it's a character of Phillip Island, and I haven't been there too many times. It hasn't been like that, to be honest.
It sure looked very windy on the race day, you know, looking watching the telecasts and everything, and then, you know, it makes you wonder, that's got to affect them, you know, coming around, so.
Yeah, no, definitely. But, you know, Monday was great there. It was still and perfect sunshine, and, you know, it's too bad we couldn't have the Monday weather for the Sunday race day.
Now, did you do any testing on Monday, or was that just a packing up day?
No, basically, you know, everything's packed up on Sunday night, and, you know, like I said, everybody's already here in Malaysia, so they're heading out to the track to unpack the stuff and get started for another weekend.
And then I've heard that Team KR has a special thing going on for Valencia. Maybe you want to talk about that a little bit, kind of introduce what you got going on there on your website.
Well, basically, you know, especially it seems like in downtimes like we're going through now, we definitely get a lot of fan support, a lot of emails, you know, of encouragement and don't give up type things and how can we help and you know, we've always been kind of looking for a way that fans could get a little bit more involved with the team, and with our website, guys, Source 23 out of Barcelona, you know, we kind of came up with this idea of, you know, utilizing pixels and, hey, what about, you know, utilizing the pixels and incorporate that into a sticker, and let's see if we can get people's names on the bike to bring them a little bit to the team. And we got that up and running Sunday, and, you know, and I must say the response has been tremendous, very positive. I didn't really expect anything less from all the people that support the team, and it's a fun thing. So I think what's going to happen is you go on and you sign up, your name will be incorporated into a KR logo, basically the way it's going to work is, you know, all the names are collected, and we'll be replacing the number 80 on the back of Curtis's seat with a KR logo, which will incorporate everybody's names. And once all the, you know, the sign-up date is October 29th, shortly thereafter, we'll be sending all the people that signed up an email, which will actually give them the location of where their name is on the sticker. So that's it's kind of a cool thing, and like I said, you know, the response has been positive and great, and it's a fun thing. It's got all our website people and press people and, you know, team members all charged up for it, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's definitely cool. I went and signed up right after
well,
that's
good.
And so, yeah. And we'll for sure put a link up on the website about it and everything. So, yeah, those kind of things, the fan involvement, and, you know, you're America's team out there and all
of
that.
Well,
I think it's great.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of response. Like I said, you know, for the first 2 days, I was quite shocked about the numbers. And I think the main thing is going to be is how, you know, we might overextend what the space that we have just on the number area with the exchange of the number and the logo. So we may have to find some more space as well, which is a good thing.
And now, as far as, you know, best can be said for this year is it's been kind of a building year for you. Is there anything that you can tell us about things that might be in the books for next year? Anything
well,
that's kind of going on?
Well, it feels more like a teardown year compared to where we were last year at this time than a rebuilding year. You know, that it's very frustrating because basically the team is exactly the same. And, you know, the only difference that affected us was the you know, the change in the engine regulation and also the tire rules affected us quite a lot. So it's really kind of a heartbreak to go to the races knowing you're kind of not going to be competitive. And, you know, it's no secret that Honda have been on the back foot and, you know, we're kind of last in line to receive anything. And, you know, as it turns out, we're not going to receive anything before the end of the year. So we're just kind of gritting our teeth and getting through it. And we are working on some programs for next year. And, you know, there's some positive things out there, definitely, because I think, you know, people do understand we can do the job under the right circumstances. And it's, you know, with the MGM Grand Group and Treasure Island, there's some programs working there, and hopefully they'll come off and we'll be styling for next year. You know, we should have some word in a couple of weeks about what our future plans are. And if not, I'm not quite sure what we'll be doing if we can't get that program together, to be honest.
Wow, that sounds kind of grim, but I really hope that program does come together. Now, as far as sponsors are concerned, do you think Treasure Island is happy with the return that they're getting as a sponsor?
The F1 Max X program is part of an overall concept, which will be, you know, announced hopefully when the whole thing is finalized. So that whole program incorporates a number of motorsports activities, MotoGP being one of them. And MotoGP is a perfect fit into this program. So Treasure Island, the group were at Laguna Seca. They do like the sport. They have gotten a lot of good positive feedback. So people keep, obviously, the more feedback they receive, the better from our standpoint. But they are happy with exposure. Their aim is to draw more people in from the European side to come into Las Vegas and stay at their hotel and resort. So, from that side, they're happy. And like I said, the F1 Max X program is what we're trying to all put together, you know, as a group. And if it does all come off, it's going to be a very good program, and hopefully we'll secure the long-term future of the program.
That's good. That's real encouraging. And I mean, it's good all around, because this is what sponsorship's all about, obviously, is the sponsors want to see some kind of return.
No,
so
definitely.
So that's great. Do you think that, kind of jumping around all over the place here, but sort of questions are popping up here in my head, do you think that some of the issues you may have had this year, I mean, obviously, you had the new chassis and the tire rules and the 800cc. Do you think it was a little bit too much too quickly that was, you know, with the tire rules and the engine rules all in 1 year, that maybe possibly had things been a bit different than your season might have been different?
I'd say I'm not quite sure why the engine rule was actually ever put into place, to be honest. I know there were some concerns about safety, especially after Kato's accident in Suzuka, and I think that's what spurred it all in the beginning. But the racing was excellent last year. Pretty much everybody had a chance at one time or the other to get on the podium. I think the tire rule is something that was instilled to at least try and cut some of the costs to the tire companies, but also gain a little bit more access to the tire companies for the racing teams. And you know, it's hard to say if we were still on 990s under the current rules. If you know, my personal opinion, Michelin would probably be in the same boat that they are now, just because they, you know, their method of working is different than Bridgestone's. So for Michelin to get working sort of in the same manner, it's almost a cultural change within their company and a different way that they got to start working to basically make the band that their tire works in a little bit wider than it is right now.
Okay. And then we had that whole thing with the sort of ominous kind of almost a threat or now it's almost being passed off as it was just a joke or whatever about the one tire rule for next year. When that was sort of being talked about, I'm not sure if within the paddock it was a, you know, everybody knew it was not going to happen or if people thought it was going to happen or whatever. What was your kind of take on that? Were you sort of thinking that would be a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I know there's a lot of, you know, talk about competition in the sport and, you know, how the one tire would take it away. But from our perspective and the independent team's perspective, having a one tire rule is definitely the way to go. And, you know, I'm not against the competition amongst the other tire companies, but what you have now is a situation, you know, if MotoGP is really a survival of the fittest type deal, then teams should be able to have the choice of tire that they want on their motorcycle, regardless, right now, you know, Honda have said, you know, I think it's gone away, but Honda said they would prefer to go to Bridgestone. Yamaha have said that they, you know, would consider Bridgestone. If those teams want to go because they think they're on a product that's not allowing them to be at their top level now, then they should be able to do that. They shouldn't be restricted to stay on a, you know, tire until that tire gets up to a certain level, in my opinion. And that's the same for us. It's more of a choice than, you know, than a competition thing. You know, right now Dunlop spend money and they've been trying very hard to bring back, you know, their company to get to a competitive level. And, you know, nobody's saying that there should be five teams on Dunlop tires, for instance. So I think Michelin will come out of it. What they're going through is a little bit of a blip. And like I said, it's a different, you know, kind of a mentality under these rules. And probably there will be some kind of a change to help compensate the number of tires received in a weekend. But, you know, again, for us, it comes down to choice. And it's having the, you know, when you go out and try and raise millions of dollars to compete, and then you are given something that, you know, possibly could hold you back, then why even do it, basically? You know what I mean?
Sure, I know. It's good.
So, yeah, I mean, competition is great, but somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. Right now, Bridgestone is winning. And if other motorcycle manufacturers or teams want to be on that product, then in my opinion, they should be allowed to.
Okay. Yeah, that's a kind of a inner viewpoint there. I appreciate that. That's a great one. Well, all right. I will let you go. Thank you very much, Chuck.
All right. Take care,
Bob. We'll talk to you again soon.
It's always a pleasure having Chuck on the show. He's a super nice guy, a real class act. So like he said in the interview there, make sure that you go to the website at teamkr.com, and I'll put a full link up on my website that you can pass through to get to the Team KR website. Go to that website, put your name in, get your name on the sticker. That's a really cool thing. I think, like he said, it's a, you know, sort of fan involvement and stuff. It's going to be a cool stuff. And if you happen to be at Valencia and you got a camera and you can get in the paddock, which I understand is a little difficult at a place like Valencia, but whatever, see if you can get a picture. I'd like to have a picture of that, the sticker. I know they're going to put it up on the website and all of that afterwards, but it'd be kind of even cooler to have a picture there of the bike while it's in the paddock with that sticker going on.
This is Jim Race from RideOn2.com, and I'd like to add my congratulations to you, Bob, on your 100th show. Way to go.
Hi, this is Mert Lawwell. You're listening to the 100th issue of MotoGP OD. I'm the maker of the prosthetic hands that helps to get amputee motorcycle riders back on motorcycles. It's a device that I developed several years ago to help a racing friend of mine, Chris Dreher, get back into riding his motorcycle, and now I'm able to help a lot of people get back on riding their bikes and bicycles as well. So hope that none of you need it, but I have it if you do need it.
All right. I do appreciate it. And I do. I meant the words that I said in my email that I think the work you're doing is very admirable. I think it's a cool thing. And
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I tell you, if you see some of these people and how it changes their lives, I mean, it really is satisfying. My star pupil is a little kid that rides motocross back east in Ottawa, Illinois. And Jake McCulloch is his name. At any rate, a few years ago, he was just a backmarker at the club events at motocross, and he got one of my prosthetic hands, and in 4 months, he was on the podium. And it changed his life around so much that he's now a motivational speaker for the Shriners.
Wow, and how old is he? you said?
Well, he's 17 now.
What was he using before he got your prosthetic hand?
Well, he just had any kind of homemade thing that he could try to hook onto, and it, you know, nothing was really working. And then he saw the On Any Sunday Revisited episode, and on that, Bruce did an interview with Chris Dreher, and Chris Dreher was showing the hand and showing you know, how it worked and all, and that's where the kid learned about it.
So that's really cool. Like, and I'm sure you've got a lot of those kind of success stories, and so yeah, I do. I really think it's a cool thing, and I'll have to admit, you know, it was a little bit of a fear for me, because you know, you hear about the guys that die over in Iraq, but there's 10 times that number that are wounded, and it's for them to be able to come back and the variety of different things that are available to them, so at least they can kind of continue doing the things that they love to do.
Is, exactly.
Right, and for all sorts of people, for a variety of different reasons that they may be in need of such a device, and I think it's a really cool thing. So.
Yep. Okay,
all right.
Bob.
Thank you very much, Mert. Do appreciate the time.
You bet.
Hi, this is Darren Carpenter from Portland, Oregon, and you're listening to show number 101. Oh, wait. Sorry. I mean... Show number 99. No, sorry. Show number 100. I love your podcast, Bob. Keep doing a great show.
Hi, this is Chuck Axlin with Team Mart. Congratulations to MotoGPOD on your 100th show, and thanks to all the listeners that support the program.
All right. We got Jules Cheezik on the phone. How are you doing tonight, Jules?
Hey, I'm doing great, Bob.
Good. Glad to hear. Glad to talk to you. It's always good to talk to you. And so we just finished up Phillip Island. We're obviously going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the other stuff in the news going on.
I wanted to just say congratulations, Bob, on your 100th show.
Well, thank you very much, Jules. I do appreciate it. And you, in your own way, have definitely been a large part of that. So thank you very much. And congratulations to you also for all your
thanks.
Help.
I just wanted to like make sure the listeners realize, like, I did, I think, like 5 shows on my own. So, and I think Jim did like 4 on his own. And so you did about 91.
Yeah, but the thing is those shows are always amazing. A lot easier when I have somebody else doing them with me. So, like I said, it's definitely I think part of the you know, the 100th anniversary Diamond Jubilee or whatever you want to call it celebrations is definitely part of yours. But enough.
Thanks.
Enough back pattery. Let's move on and what do we want to talk about first? You want to talk a little bit about Phillip Island first?
Sure. That okay. Just happened.
It's yes. Fresh. Yes, it was good stuff. I unfortunately could not watch it live on Saturday night with you guys, but I heard the chat room was packed. You said it was a really good time in there?
Yeah. It was packed with Aussies.
Aussies. A lot of Aussies came in, really?
And Aussie wannabes, I think.
Oh, really? Cool.
No, it was the usual suspects plus a lot of other people. It was just really good to see, like, the, you know, just since that room got set up, that people are actually using it, and it's good conversations in there.
It is actually fun. It's a lot of fun. So for Malaysia, we got Malaysia coming up, which is again going to be for U.S. listeners. It'll be on Saturday night. I don't have the exact time because it's not on the MotoGP website, but look for it around 10 p.m. It might be 9.
I think 9 or 10, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an hour different, but I'm not 100% sure off the top of my head which way. But whatever, check it out. We'll have that information up, and hopefully, actually, it'll be in the intro to this show that we're recording right now. I'm sure that I'll have that by the time I record that intro. And in one way or the other, yeah, we'd love to have you in that chat room. I won't be there again because it's going to be a Navy weekend for me this weekend, so I'll have to watch the race on Sunday. But Jules will take care of it, right, Jules?
Yep, and Jim Race is always there, and he's a great character to have in the chat room.
Oh, yeah, Jim's lots of fun. We've got to have him back on the show again. So we're getting a little distracted. Let's move on to talking about Australia. Initially, we had some weird weather. It was described for the Friday free practice as the usual Phillip Island 4 seasons in one day sort of a thing, with rain and just wind, of course. You always got wind at Phillip Island and lots of stuff. And it kind of looked like Casey Stoner was going to be super dominant because in the first 3 free practices, he was top on the timesheets.
Yeah.
However.
Yep. 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
And 4 comes around. And
right.
qualifying came around, and again, at most of the session, it looked like Stoner was going to take it, but then Rossi managed to grab the fast time away from him, and then Pedrosa grabbed the fast time away from Rossi. So our grid ended up with Pedrosa, Rossi, and Stoner on the front row. So Stoner was off the pole position there at his home race.
And both Rossi and Stoner said that they got held up on their last run.
Right, and with
they're both out on the hot tires and didn't get to finish the laps.
But with the qualifying format that we use in MotoGP, that's how it's going to be. It's just the way life is, and you know, the riders can get upset and kick at one another or make obscene finger gestures or whatever it is. But it's just it's a fact of racing. So, real quick down the rest of the grid, we might as well run down it because that's what we normally do on our race wrap-ups. Second row, Nicky Hayden, former world champion who is now going to turn his crown over to Casey Stoner, followed by Loris Caparossi and Randy Depunier, putting in a good qualifying effort there for Kawasaki. Third row, Alex Barros, Shinya Nakano, and Sylvain Guintoli. Which, talking about good qualifying efforts, that actually was fantastic because qualifying was dry and... is for Sylvain to be up there in the top 10 on those Dunlops, I thought was actually pretty good.
It was great. And it was actually dry and cold.
Right. Do you think the cold had something to do with that at all? Or
no, I just think this, you know, this is a kind of track that certain riders are extremely good at riding.
Right.
And you know, you only need to have one good lap.
Yeah, that's all it takes, and that's all you get sometimes. Yeah, and everybody seems to love Phillip Island. It's so many riders, you know, they say, oh, it's my favorite track, or this and that and the other. It's a great track. It's very flowing. It's pretty cool. It's all those birds, though. And, I mean, we've seen bird strikes at it's just insane.
Yeah, Courser's famous seagull.
Yeah. So fourth row, Anthony West, Australian there, in 10th spot on the grid. Colin Edwards, not the greatest qualifying effort, in 11th, and Marco Melandri down there in 12th.
Which is surprising because he's extremely good at this track.
Right. Do you think there was some sort of maybe complications from the variety of injuries he's had? Or
you know, I was actually looking for something about that, and I don't know anything about why he ended up so far back.
Yeah, it's odd that the one of the I don't know about you, but I get all the press releases that I can and all that, and you try to put it together and sort of distill it into some sort of reasonable information. And Honda is remarkably tight with their press stuff. Yeah, the Gresini website's a joke. Okay, carrying on. Fifth row, Carlos Checa, John Hopkins on the other Suzuki, and Makoto Tomita on a Dunlop. And then... further down on the sixth row, we had Christopher Mullen, the other Australian. There's yet another not all that awe-inspiring qualifying effort.
Well, as I said in the chat, he was doing Barry Sheen lap times.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Which kind of fitting since he had the Barry Sheen livery going on.
Right.
Which actually looked really cool. He had the...
It looked actually great.
Yeah.
Because he had the 7 on there, so...
Yes, the 7. The numbers were dead straight, and the 7 had, you know, of course, the stroke, and it was in a yellow circle. They made it look both Rizla and Sheenish at the same time. I thought it came out really well. And, you know, a lot of times they try to do these retro things, and it doesn't look very good, but that one was great. So Christopher Mullen, Chaz Davis, back for Pramac Dantin, which is kind of cool for Chaz. And but you know, qualifying down there on the sixth row, which you know, it's his second MotoGP race on that bike and everything. I think that's it's respectable. Tony Elias, which
is just bizarre,
shocking. Exactly.
I think those bikes were having problems with the qualifying tires or something. I don't know, but
really?
he actually did say that it was the wind. He said. It was a very windy qualifying session, so I don't know why it affected him more. Maybe because he's sideways all the time.
Maybe that's it.
but I was very surprised to see him down there.
Yeah, that's a bit of a low-end qualifying position for him. Interesting stuff. And then rounding out the grid, Curtis Roberts on the Team Roberts KR212V, mental block there of what kind of motorcycle we're talking about. But interesting thing, if we're done with the grid and let's move on to the grid walk, when they were doing the grid walk in the race, I caught that, you know, you, most of the time you've got the umbrella girl standing there and the cameraman's walking around from writer to writer to writer, and you're not necessarily, you know, hearing that writer depending upon which commentary you're listening to or whatever, but they always talk about that guy. When they had Curtis Roberts on, he had his face shield down, and it was a bit like, you know, his body language.
Talking to him?
Well, it was a bit, his body language is a bit like, don't talk to me.
And
I thought that was a bit interesting. Just, you know, sort of apropos of nothing, you know, when most of the other writers are kind of, you know, making faces at the camera and waving and all that business, and Curtis is just sort of sitting there with the face shield down and like, let's get this over with.
So. On the other hand, by the time the camera gets to the back of the grid, the writers are in different positions. Those guys in the front probably have their lids down too.
Yeah, that might be well true. Yeah, it's probably time to go. So yeah, you're right. Actually thinking about it. But I don't recall noticing it before though. But and then a lot of times the feed that we see on television, certainly you don't see the whole grid walk. And if you're watching it on Crunchyvision on the internet, you may or may not be able to even tell if their shields are down. So kind of interesting. Well, all right. So then on to the race.
By the way, I just want to say I also love this track, and like for many reasons. Like, first of all, like aesthetically, I think it's a beautiful track. So the greatest photography in MotoGP is from Australia, and I mean, I've never seen a bad race there.
Right. Know? I agree. The 250 race was smashing.
The 125 was insane.
Yeah, which I didn't see yet.
It was crazy. There were like 10 riders still fighting for the lead on the last lap.
Really?
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, there's always good racing at Phillip Island, and it is. It's a beautiful, classic, flowing track. A lot of cool corners. There's elevation change. I think the wind plays a big factor. It is a neat place. The only thing I have about Phillip Island, because it is one of the tracks where I'd like to go, you know what I mean? There's a few tracks where it's like, one of these days, I'm going to go there. And Phillip Island is definitely one of them. But you got to be prepared for a fairly rough and ready GP. You know, you're kind of standing there alongside this thing. There's not a lot of fan sort of facilities. I know they built some new grandstands and whatnot this year, but it still seems like the vast majority of people, you don't even get sort of a hillside to sit down on. You're standing there.
That's looking at it. That's the kind of race I like.
Yeah. Yeah, you're an old school kind of guy. Stand there, watch this motorcycle go zoom, 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 and then 2 minutes later, zoom, zoom, zoom again. But and there's a lot to be said, though, for the whole atmosphere. And it just does seem like a really cool place. Although I've heard that, you know, getting out of there is a nightmare, what with the single bridge to get out of there and all of that. But
and Liam always says that that they have the worst facilities for the teams, too.
Really? It's a bit primitive and all that? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the price you pay. So it has a relatively reasonable amount of history, and plus the fact that it is such a sort of a natural flowing track. I think it says a lot for it.
Yeah.
But in any event, the start, and that reminds me of one thing I wanted to say. As soon as you said some of the best photography and imagery and whatnot that you get out of Phillip Island, and you do, because there are some excellent, you know, the camera angles that you're seeing, there's just some fantastic ones where you see the riders come over the hill, go right around the curve, that sort of
and
good thing.
The ocean in the background.
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. But one place where it's crappy at Phillip Island is the start.
That's true.
It was horrible. I mean, and you just saw this kind of like, well, I didn't even see who sort of got even close to like a good start or the best shot or anything like that of the start, the way the camera angle was. And it's because there's a hill and it's where are they going to put the camera, that sort of a thing. But it still was a little bit disappointing that, you know, you can't kind of see that sort of drag race that is a MotoGP start. But in any event, Stoner managed to get that whole shot into the first corner quite easily, it looked like to me, past Rossi and Pedrosa. So and oddly enough, Nicky Hayden was right behind him, hot on his heels on the end of
beautiful
that first
start
corner.
By Nicky.
Yes, he really did. He had a beautiful start. And for the first quite a few laps, which I don't have a lap chart here in front of me, but he was right up there with him. It was really, really looking very promising. I started having my doubts, though, because it's somewhat something that we've seen from Hayden before of let's call it, not the best tire management. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
So I was a little worried on that one. But carrying on, what basically what did we have sort of the first significant
Rossi did
sort
not
of
have
events?
A very good start, Pedrosa had a decent start. It was Melandri who had, I think, probably one of the best starts out of the grid. He jumped up into like fourth or fifth, and then Rossi managed to pass him, and Barros got a good start. I know that like Rossi, you know, dropped his usual start. Just as usual, his start was not that good. Oh, and speaking of starts, did you see what happened at the end of warm up?
No, I sure didn't. What happened?
Okay, so apparently, Danny Pedrosa when he was doing his practice start, something happened to his clutch lever, and he launched the bike. He did like the, you know, the wraparound wheelie during the start. Like,
oh, really?
Basically, yeah, end over.
Yeah, they did say something about that in the commentary, but I didn't realize that that was quite the case.
It was I was watching it, and then I had just turned off warm up because I thought it was over, and I was talking to Heidi online, Heidi Kender, and he goes, "Oh my god!" And I'm like, "What did I just miss?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, Danny just upended his bike." So then I later was able to catch a video of that.
Wow!
So actually, I'll send you a link because it's on YouTube. It's pretty.
Pretty insane. I'd like to take a look at that, and I'll go ahead and put it up on the website too. So put link for YouTube.
Cool.
That's interesting. So
he had a not a very good start, but they sorted themselves out, like him and Rossi ended the lap in third and fourth. So it was, you know, Stoner, Nicky, Danny, and then Rossi.
Right. And Nicky was doing well, like I said, for quite a few laps. However, he started appearing to look like he was having some sort of tire issues. I'm not 100% sure if it truly was tires or what, because a little bit later on, he basically engine done blowed up.
So first of all, you know, Melandri caught up into the lead group, passed Danny. Him and Danny had a very good little dice going for at least four or five laps.
Yes.
It looked like he might actually have the pace to catch Stoner and Hayden, because he was setting the fastest laps, but very quickly he caught up with Rossi. I think they did a quick swap here and there. Rossi made a little mistake, and then he got Marco back, and then just pretty much like from lap 8 on, Marco just started dropping back. It was really weird, and I'm not really sure what happened. I think he had tire. I mean, he also just wasted his tire early on, and he ended up, you know, really it costing him as well. And Hayden stayed on Stoner for like 10 laps.
Yes.
Before Stoner started getting a gap on him, at which point like Rossi started catching up, and eventually we know what happened there.
Right. Yeah, the first 10 laps, all the action was kind of going on back in a battle for third and battle for third and fourth and a battle for fifth and sixth, kind of a thing going on.
Caprossi was in there, Barros is in there, mm-hmm. And Danny and Macchio.
Right, and there's no doubt that it was really, really good stuff. But out in front, you know, Hayden was keeping up with Stoner, but I don't know that other than a couple odd spots here and there, I don't know that he was ever actually really challenging for a pass.
I think that Stoner, we didn't really see, unfortunately, that much. There was so much going on between Pedrosa and Melandri and Rossi that we actually missed a lot of the video from the front. So we don't know, but I have a feeling that this is typical Stoner stuff, where like he would ride by the pit board. The pit board would say, "Oh yeah, Nicky's, you know, 0.3. So he goes, "Okay, well, we'll make it 0.5.
Right.
Next time it's 0.5. He starts to relax again. You know, that's his style. It's like he likes to be relaxed up front.
Yeah,
and
yeah. And
he did that in this race.
And this just absolutely, you know, like a metronome of perfect lap after perfect lap after perfect lap.
Yep.
And he's on fire this year. There's just no doubt about it. He definitely earned this championship. But in any event, Nicky started fading on lap 11, and it could have been due to tires. It could have been due to
other issues, because basically on lap 13, his engine, he puff of smoke and lots of pounding on the tank with fists and all of that, and he just, he parked it. Bike was done. And yep. You could see that he was extremely upset. It's like we saw at Estoril last year, is when he was knocked out by Pedrosa. It was just somewhat justifiable. You know, it's not like he was having sort of some, you know, childish temper tantrum for nothing sort of a thing. He was, you know, the guy was upset because I think he was really honestly in line that he might have been able to hold on to it and take a podium. He's doing okay. He might not have pulled off second, but he probably could have been able to do third.
Yeah, no, and the thing is, you know, he hates not to finish races.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Nicky, even if he'll fight for 10th.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
That is true. He is, and yeah, he's a good employee. But it's a fact.
And he also is one of those guys who absolutely loves this track, and he probably was just looking forward to actually racing there.
Right. All pressure of any kind, not that there's been a whole lot of pressure on Nicky about the championship for the whole year, but you know, it's done, it's over mm-hmm. with, you know, let's do what we can. And I can see that. But for the last part of the race, I think the wow prize goes to Caparossi. That pass that was
a big surprise. I have to say I was very surprised.
The way he
caught up, He did some very smart passing, and Rossi even said this afterwards in the interview. It was like it was almost like they were going to have this little fight like the old days. That's what Rossi was saying at the end, and unfortunately, we didn't actually see that because Caparossi went by and then just kept going.
Yeah. Broke away, and it was Stoner out in front and Caparossi in second with really not a lot of close challenging between the two of them. I mean, that I noticed. I mean, I don't think that Vermeulen was I don't think Stoner was ever in any danger of being passed by Caparossi.
Oh no, he was 7 seconds.
He was way ahead. Yeah.
Oh yeah. We never even really saw him when they were showing other riders.
Right. Exactly. They were showing the closer racing farther down the grid.
Yep. And then Rossi had space around him, and Danny had space around him by the end. So it was. It got to be. The race was over really by lap 20.
Yeah. It was a good race. I mean, it was exciting. The weather was beautiful, perfect. Looked a bit windy, but other than that, it was, there was no water, no rain, no precipitation of any kind. Mm-hmm. So for race day, for all of our Australian listeners, I'm sure you were there and you probably had a great time. It looked like a lot of fun. It turned out to be a good race. It's a bit of a lame duck race because the whole championship thing is over, but we still have a battle for second going on in the championship. And this is... something that's was chapping Rossi's hide, so to speak, because he doesn't want to finish third in the championship. It's flat out.
No.
Losing
the championship twice in 1 year.
Right, exactly. And this stuff is very, very important to him right now. And I think that's going to show through even in our last two races, Malaysia and Valencia. So we should have some good stuff going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations also to Barros. He had he finished in fifth, which is his second best finish of the year.
Right. And a very admirable effort after, not a bad qualifying effort, but, to make it up to fifth, I thought was pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, it's a terrible qualifying effort. What am I talking about? Where was he at on the grid?
He was seventh.
Seventh. No, that's good. I was looking at the wrong sheet, and I was like, wait a minute. I got too many pieces of paper going on here. Real quick down the order of who won what, and we'll sort of talk about stuff. The podium was Casey Stoner in first, Loris Caparossi in second, Al Ducati there, and Valentino Rossi in third. So in some ways or another, all Italian podium. You had, Italian manufacturers, two Italian riders, all that good stuff. The victory lap was kind of funny. Jules and I were sort of trading some jokes before that somebody had given Stoner a flag, this immense Australian flag that he's riding around with, and there was a lot of handshaking and fists, props to you, buddy, kind of thing between him and Caparossi. And Caparossi had a little Italian flag that was maybe like, you know, a tenth of the size of this Australian flag.
That's what you get for second place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's what you get for second place. But, you know, they had the cool sort of Ducati side-by-side ride around. I think, you know, it was a good day for Ducati out there. It really was.
Well, they also clinched the team and the constructors.
Yes, right. That's true.
They basically won everything.
Right. And it's cool to see, you know, from European manufacturer, first time in like 30 years. It's good stuff. This is 33 years.
Yeah,
good stuff for the sport. We got more talking about good stuff for the sport here in a minute that we're going to get to, but let's run down real quick the rest of the classification of the race. Fourth spot went to Pedrosa. Admirable effort for the whole race. Fifth to Alex Barros, like Jules said. You know, second best finish of the year. Good stuff, showing that Primack Dantine can still get up there in the top five. That's real good to see. Sixth spot, Randy Dupuynier. We were deprived of another chest shot, but actually, that's kind of nice. John Hopkins in seventh. Chris Vermeulen in eighth.
I have to say, those guys really did a good job getting up there because
I think
they,
so.
Well, Hopper had a good start, but Vermeulen did not. But the fact that, you know, these guys have been you know, they're fourth and fifth in the championship, and Suzuki is actually third in points. Rizzo Suzuki is ahead of HRC.
Right, which is kind of cool. Yeah,
that's amazing. That's amazing.
And I mean, yeah, they've been extremely consistent. Like this race. This was good. I mean, their qualifying numbers weren't that great. You know, for whatever reason, they couldn't get that high up there. But when it came to race day, they were up there. And I mean, that's, you know, yeah, seventh and eighth. You know, it's not the podium, but hey, it's in the top third. That's good stuff. So yeah, you know, kind of cool. Ninth spot went to Colin Edwards. Still trying, whatever. Marco Melandri in 10th. Carlos Checa in 11th. Anthony West in 12th. For a home race, West, not 100% sure exactly all the details of what happened there.
He got passed by some guys?
Yeah, pretty much got passed by some guys. I mean, you know, it's, what are you going to say? And apparently I got a news story that, why don't we bring this one up now, before we finish the grid walk. I was, sent an email, and this was by Terry James. Terry James sent me in a story about the father of Australian MotoGP star Anthony West has been charged with assault after a violent brawl at the Phillip Island Grand Prix. Did you hear about this one, Jules?
No. That's great.
Yeah. Tony West had just finished watching his son race around the circuit when he became involved in the fight just before 6 p.m., witnesses said that Mr. West, a former professional boxer, became mixed up in the altercation at the Champions Club after hearing abuse aimed at his Kawasaki riding son. Then the story gets a bit Australian, meaning confusing, with some interesting sort of terms like stoush and stuff like that, which I assume mean fight. but basically, I'm pretty sure that it doesn't sound like, even former professional boxer or not, it doesn't quite sound like Aunt West's dad really kicked ass and took names. It sounded like somebody hit him with something or other. Let's see, what did they say? He took a king hit. So whatever that is, he got hit and he just slumped over the fence. He looked like he was out cold. We called the medics because it was pretty bad. They looked like they had too much to drink. But whatever, he was arrested along with a 47-year-old man while an 18-year-old man was treated for facial injuries at the scene, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's kind of a bit, in some ways, you know, I mean, it's very bad for Aunt West's dad, and I hope that nothing happens and that, you know, he just gets a bit of a, you know, whatever the Australian equivalent of the night in jail and throw, you know, slap on the wrist sort of a thing. But
king,
you know,
hit, by the way, is Australian for a knockout punch. Thank you, Google.
Yes, Google is your friend. But he says, you know, for he's defending his son's honor. You know, somebody's bad-mouthing his kid, and it's like, you know, all right, and punch him in the chops. And I think that in some ways, like I said, it's very sad for the dad to have gotten arrested, but in some ways I think it's kind of cool. And so,
I want to go to Australia. There's some cool people there.
Oh, yeah.
I love those blokes.
So our thank you, Terry, for sending that story in. And to Aunt West's dad, well, you know, good luck. So moving on down the grid. Let's see. Or down the classification. 13th spot, Shinya Nakano. 14th spot, Sylvain Guintoli. Couldn't carry through after that admirable qualifying effort. In 9th, he lost 5 spots, finished 14th, which is, you know, still 2 points. What the hell? Tony Elias, 15th. Not a spectacular race for Tony today. Makota Tomata down in 16th. And Curtis Roberts, actually finishing one, was down in 17th, which is good. You know, that they at least finished it. And I mean,
actually was ahead of Tomata for a few laps.
Right, right. So
Tomata beat him at the very end, which means he was not riding alone.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's got to be so frustrating for the team, for Curtis, for everybody. But they've got some cool stuff going on that we're hopefully going to be talking about a little later in the show. It's got to be very, very frustrating. But he's out there. He's continuing to try. And I think that says right there a lot, basically. So it's kind of a cool thing. Retirements, we had Nicky Hayden, obviously, with the done broke engine. Puff of Smoke will generally do that to you. And then we also had Chaz Davis retired on the same lap as Hayden. And I'm not 100% sure why. Did you read anything on that, Jules?
Don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know.
So I have no idea. We haven't had a chance to talk to Liam, so got no idea why he why that retirement happened. I don't have any press releases or anything, because I was sort of looking for him on the results, and it's like, where the hell did he go? And he'd had a retirement. So whatever, we're hoping for a better result from Chaz at Malaysia and Valencia, you know, something. Let's see what you can do. But so far, it sounds like everybody in Ducati, in one way or the other, is quite impressed. And there's talk of, you know, Ducati test rider job or possibilities for another ride next year, still possibly in the offing. But something along the lines, at least people seem to like him. So I think that about covers our Phillip Island, unless you sort of had something to bring up or anything?
Nah.
Okay. So why don't we...
It's good to see nobody crashed out. It was a clean race.
Yes, it was. It was.
But then again, like I said, after lap 20, we basically had a parade.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a bit of a, you know, but I mean, it went 20 laps with, you know, nice challenging racing.
Yeah. And Stoner, you know, it was great to see just, you know, his dominant. I mean, if he's going to be dominant anywhere, this is the place to be dominant.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
in front of his race fans and all that, and, yeah. Yeah, his wife was looking pretty hot, too. So. Oh, wait, she looks pretty hot at every race. So, but, yeah, so, I mean, it is good. And like I said, you know, Stoner is a champion in the making. He earned this year's championship crown. There's no doubt about it. I really do, you know, hope to see more of it next year. Of course, there's always that, you know, I'd rather see some closer racing and all of that kind of business. And we'll just have to see what happens next year. I think it's going to be a different ball game.
Yeah.
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 It is.
Well, there's one guy who says it better be.
Oh, yeah?
Or he's leaving, which is, of course, Valentino Rossi. He, Michelle Dove actually sent me this link. Rossi threatens to leave Yamaha.
I saw that link. The BBC interview and stuff like that, right? And one BBC story called it whinging, which is British for whining, if you're not familiar with that. And it basically Rossi is sort of saying that the folks back at the Yamaha factory aren't quite cutting it, which I don't think is entirely fair, to be honest with you.
Well, I will say, you know, everything that Rossi says lately sounds like whining, but he has a point. It's like, you know, why did it take Yamaha so long to get a new motor out when they knew in Qatar that they were so underpowered, right?
And, yeah.
And it failed, you know, like it failed the first time out. So it's just, I can see why he's saying these things, but.
Well, they were actually back.
Well, go ahead.
They were actually back on the regular valve motor at this race.
I know, but I'm saying that, you know, the first thing they brought the pneumatic valves, it failed.
Right.
You know, after 5 laps. Right. It's pretty sad. And then, but then you go back and you look at all the people that we've always made fun of for whining, like Biaggi, and, you know, it starts to, like, I mean, they all have legitimate reasons to complain. It's just some of them just clam up. Like, Nicky Hayden doesn't really complain much.
Right, but courage doesn't necessarily mean the absence of fear. It just means the fact that you can face up to that. Then perhaps the absence of whining doesn't necessarily mean the absence of something to bitch about. It just means not bitching about it. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, that, I think that Rossi should, I don't know, he should take his lumps.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of things, almost everything that Rossi says to a point, I think is calculated. And
And it also gets amplified.
Yes, that's
because
true.
Because he is
Yes,
Rossi,
he can make the slightest off-the-cuff comment, and the next thing you know, it's, yeah, world news. So, there's those factors to go. And it'll remain to be seen whether Rossi actually, he's contracted with Yamaha through 2008. It's going to take, you know, pretty much an act of Congress. He'll be there at Yamaha next year. There's no doubt about that. But after that, you know, there's speculation of what's going to happen. I stand behind, you know, we haven't heard squat about Rossi's Formula One or WRC or any of that kind of business, because he wants to finish on a high note. He's not going to finish MotoGP and go to Formula One or whatever after a couple seasons of not being champion.
No, and he said at the beginning of the season that he's actually, after last season, he kind of decided he's going to stick around for quite a few years.
I think he made that decision because he, you know, didn't win the championship last year.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, if say, assuming he were to come back, win the championship in 2008, who knows what would happen in 2009. But we'll have to see. He's going to have a lot of tax bills coming up, so he's going to have to find the highest paying job. But
I always wonder, like, does that really bug him? I mean, it sounds like a gigantic amount of money, but he's worth, you know, two or three times that, so.
Yeah, that's true, but it's not like it necessarily means he has two or three times that much cash just laying around.
Sure, of course.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, the thing is, it's got to kind of get to you, but on some level, you're right, he might be able to get past it. So that's hard to say. I haven't heard too much about that in the news lately either. And who knows, just because the whole thing has been, it's been in the news that, you know, they're trying to get it, doesn't mean that that's going to actually happen. You know, he might, whatever sort of legal proceedings go on, might say that, no, he doesn't know squat. Mm-hmm. So, whichever. Why don't we talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that has been so important lately, which, of course, means lately, the tire rule.
The tires.
Yes,
right.
The tires. Some good news.
Speaking of Rossi and tires.
Yeah, yeah. So go
ahead.
We
still talk about him wanting to go to Bridgestone, despite the fact that it's almost been a month and a half since David Brivio said that his team is not switching to Bridgestone. There's going to be no split garage or anything like that. It's going to be one garage, you know, between Lorenzo and Rossi, and they're going to be on Michelins. But Toby Moody actually wrote an article about on Saturday about Rossi saying he still wants Bridgestones, and there's still talk about him switching to Bridgestones.
Which is super interesting. And this leads more back towards that whole Rossi thing, where is this what he thinks, that he can, you know, basically kind of, you know, make these comments and get it into the press and then it's going to happen? Is he that powerful? Is he that, I'm not sure where I'm getting with it, but, or is it just like,
well,
you know, look, deal with it, dude.
You know, that Dennis Noyes article, I think really opened my eyes. We just have no idea just how incredibly, popular this sport is in Europe. We forget, like, that in Italy, the, I think it's like 40% of the TV audience on race day is watching MotoGP.
Right. Well, you're right. And Italy and Spain, the numbers were somewhere around there from that article, but they're also saying that they're dropping off a little bit because of that. And yeah, so yes, Rossi probably does have this clout.
I think that Rossi's the best thing that ever happened to Dorna and the money machine.
Yeah.
Therefore, he does get the voice because he's an extremely popular writer. There's people who watch MotoGP just because of Valentino Rossi.
Well, sure, sure. And there's lots of people that found MotoGP, whether they, you know, for whatever reason, but they found MotoGP because of Rossi. And yeah, his face is all over the place. Did you hear about that Italian or Irish airline that was using his image without his permission?
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Which I don't have the name of the airline off the top of my head, but it's an Irish airline, and they had a picture of Rossi and basically saying, "When I fly home to Italy, I fly tax free." And so there was the story was that, you know, Rossi's whole, you know, Rossi, the Rossi sort of organization is taking the airline to court because they, you know, there was no, you know, they used his image without permission. So, and basically that's going to help him pay his tax bill. but I thought it was a great ad. You know,
I think it says something like, he doesn't have to pay taxes on our airline or something like that.
It was something, you know, I don't know the full details of exactly what they mean, because they're talking about a lot of people fly tax-free on that airline, and when it's Rossi, yes, he doesn't. But whatever. So, yeah, I think you're right, though, that he does. It's a little bit like say, for NASCAR and what the you know, when we get hit over the head with it over here with Dale Jr., you know, that...
You know, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. So. Oh, come on. Sorry. You can't have no idea. You must know something. But
every time, there's been times where I switch on speed and they're talking about some guy, Dale.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't avoid it. And that's the thing is, I'm not a NASCAR fan. Everybody knows that. Jules is not a NASCAR fan. But you just, no matter how much of a non-fan you are, you see this guy. And as
all you have to do is walk into a Kragen's to buy stuff for your car, and you're going to see his face everywhere.
Sure. Well, shit, we walked into Best Western, and we had to see the other guy. So
that's right.
But it's like, what kind of Best Western sponsors NASCAR? It's like, geez. But what happened to manly things like, you know, oil and, you know, it's like Best Western. Or isn't there a car sponsored by Tampax? I mean, how'd you like to drive the Tampax car? But. Yeah.
You think there is one?
I think they did. I don't know. And there's Tide, and there's all kinds of stupid sponsors in NASCAR. But come on, we're digressing. But what I'm getting at is that, you know, with NASCAR, and I do know I am, you know, like I said, I'm not a NASCAR fan. And with their whole championship business, it's kind of weird and this and that. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is, one, not racing for the same team next year and not in the points and all of that. But the guy still seems to have all kinds of incredible clout just because he's the name associated with it. So what my point is not that NASCAR's good or Dale Earnhardt's good or anything like that. I'm not worried about that right now. But my point is that Rossi has the same thing going on in Europe with MotoGP. And I think you're right on that one, Jules.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So
And speaking of that, you know, like I think that Dorna, when people say that there's a conspiracy theory and that Danny and Rossi are, you know, the ring masters of the ringleaders of the you know, single tire rule and stuff like that, they're guys who are complaining about the tires and they want to switch to Bridgestone. That's what they say, right?
Right.
And Dorna, who knows that the machine that makes their money is complaining about tires, and both of those guys are their machine, because in Spain, Danny Pedrosa is, you know, an unbelievable star also.
Right.
So it's not that like those guys are, you know, it's not like this evil circle that's sitting around with Rossi and Danny going, let's have a single tire rule. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, they made some comments about the tires. They're not happy with Michelins. They want to go on Bridgestones. They both wanted to go on Bridgestones. And then this is Dorna's reaction, was the single tire rule.
Right. I agree. You know? And don't forget, too, Dorna is a Spanish company, and they're going to be very sensitive to the things that are popular. And the ratings for MotoGP have been going down in Spain, especially since we've had the whole Fernando Alonso in Formula One, where, you know, it used to be that MotoGP trounced Formula One in Spain, and now that's not the case. But one thing that we're neglecting to mention here, Jules, and that we probably should before we continue to discuss this, is that we've seen articles coming out, and the news is now that the tire rule is a non-starter, that it's not going to happen for next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, no, it's not going to happen. In fact, Espeleta's playing it down like it was a joke.
Right, right, right. And it's just
like, oh, no, just kidding. And, you know, we just wanted to get these guys, you know, talking. It was like this whole big plot, like, you know, his brilliant little plot or something, which I think is bull. I think it's BS. I think that what really happened is that he realized that he was going to lose the vote. Because there's three governing bodies that have to vote, right? There's DORNA, there's the FIM, and there's the MSMA, right?
Right, and also the IRTA also votes too, don't they? Or is it just those three?
I think the IRTA are included as part of the MSMA vote. I think there's three parties at the very top level.
Right, but anything technical, the MSA can basically override. And so they lumped this tire thing into a technical rule and managed to kill it. And, I'm happy about this. It's a good thing. And I actually had hoped this when this whole thing started bubbling up and surfacing, that all it was Carmela Esposito trying to sort of light a fire under Bridgestone and Michelin to sort of get something going. And then it started looking like that was not the case, and I started pretty much losing hope. And I was thinking, well, we're going to a spec tire, and I started actually kind of wrapping my mind around the whole idea of, well, it won't be that bad. I'll live with it, you know. But now that it's kind of not going to happen, I'm pretty happy about it. So
yeah, it's good. It's good. It really is good. I think that Vermeulen summed it up really well. He said that when the spec tire came into World Superbike, yes, the World Superbike races got closer, but the development really just got stopped. Because the thing is, you know, there's much more to this than just a tire being developed. I mean, the bikes gain a lot from better traction in the tires. I mean, they have to adjust, right? So you get better rubber, you get better suspension, better chassis, everything has to follow. So that one component is so critical to the entire motorcycle that you just don't mess with it, basically. Like, don't mess with that rule. And I'm glad to see that there's something being worked out. I think they're going to basically allow more tires. I think that's what the
yeah,
the
that was definitely one of the things spoken about.
Which is one of the things you were suggesting, and maybe they've been listening to your show.
Sure.
And so here's the other thing I wanted to mention about I don't remember where I read it. If I can find the link, I'll send it to you. But Chris Vermeulen basically was talking about this tire rule a lot. And one of the things he said was the reason why the tires are so key this year is because the 800 is not as forgiving in terms of what happens when the tire starts to go off. Hmm. And what he was saying is that when in the 990 days, when the tires also wouldn't last the entire race, but you could change your style to be a more of a square off the corner and slide the rear end and still be able to keep up the lap times when the tires went off. And so you could adjust to the fact that they were coming apart, whereas on the 800s, you're wearing down a part of a tire that is, that you can't make up for by changing style. You have to keep the same style, which basically means that you're slowing down.
Yeah.
At the end.
The thing is,
I found it very interesting.
It is interesting, and I need to see that link because I haven't read that one yet. But how is it, though, and this is the one thing that's always got me, that Stoner is capable of going out there and performing and getting his, you know, the laps at the end of the race are the same times as the lap at the beginning of the race. It's like a metronome. You know, it's so frighteningly consistent.
I think he's very kind to the tire.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't really seen him. I mean, we've seen him wiggling, and people are making a lot of comments about there was a section of the track at the end of the Southern Loop where both Stoner and Pedrosa, when they were coming out, they would get a big wobble.
Uh-huh.
You remember that?
Yeah.
You'd see this big giant wobble, and it turned out that and there was a lot of like talk made about by the commentators. And those wobbles are not that big of a deal. It happens all the time on a motorcycle, on a racetrack. You get on the power a little early. It doesn't actually put that much stress on the tires.
No.
So I've never actually seen Stoner smoking his tire the way like Rossi was halfway through the race. He was already smoking his rear tire going into the loop. I think that, you know, he's a guy who never really had to ride out of the smooth corner speed style. He was in the 250s for a long time. He had only one season in MotoGP, so he didn't really unlearn it. Whereas these other guys have been on the 990s for a long time. on powerful bikes, they change their style of riding, and now they have to change back.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I think that, and we've kind of discussed that before. You mentioned that one in the past, and I think that makes a lot of sense. So, but whatever, he, in any event, no matter what you say, Stoner is capable of doing this. So that means that the other guys are also capable if they can adapt and overcome and do whatever. But if they have more tires next year, I think it'll make a difference in some way. I mean, we talked to Liam so much about tires talking about that just sometimes that just the simple raw numbers of tires not going to help. I don't need more of shitty tires. I need more good tires and that kind of thing. But the numbers of tires will be helpful in the fact that there'll be a little bit more testing as well, and it just gives them a bit more flexibility and all of that sort of thing. So I think
there's also talk about moving the choose your race tire to choose your set of tires until after the first practice day.
Right, which is another fantastic idea. That's what they, if they're going to have this choosing the tire business, it needs to be later in the week.
Yep.
There's too many things that can change at a track, or you know, it could be a new track or whatever.
Or just all the technology that's being built into the bikes. I mean, these bikes have been developed the entire year.
Exactly. So it's not like, you know, the data from last year, you know, Phillips Island data for 2006 compared to Phillip to 2007 or whatever. It's not exactly like garbage that can be thrown out the window or something. But on the other hand, you can't treat this is exactly how it's going to be. You know, you've got different weather, you've got different bike, you've got different everything, and it's just not reasonable to expect these guys to be able to, I don't think, to make these kind of selections. And I think with two wheels and the contact patch that small, that this is what you have to do.
Yep.
So, well, all right. What some of the other stuff that we were thinking about that we wanted to mention?
Well, there was this World Superbike.
Oh,
final.
Yes.
Which was incredibly interesting.
It certainly was. Which part was? Go ahead and let's talk about it, Jules. I'm going to let you carry.
Okay. So the first thing is that, what's the name of the commentator on World Superbike?
Jonathan Green and Scott Smart.
Jonathan Green.
Yeah,
he's a British dude,
mm-hmm.
and he said something really very interesting during the race. After race one, during race one, we had an incident in the first corner where Lanzi and Toseland collided, and Lanzi went off. It was actually a really nasty fall.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was bad. Yeah, we're talking about the last round of the series at Magny-Cours in France, of course.
Oh, right. Yeah, so Toseland comes in leading 29 points from Haga. No, from Biaggi,
mm-hmm.
and Haga is further 2 points behind Biaggi, and you know, all Toseland has to do is score a couple points, and he can be champion. He has to score a couple more points than Biaggi, and he can be champion. And first corner, he runs off the track because of the crash with Lanzi, and
right,
and you know, gets back into like 18th position.
Right. And this is, this was a racing series that went down to the last weekend. This was good stuff. It was great. But yes,
Haga, one of the guys who could still mathematically catch him was running away with it in the front. Right. So it was like a nightmare scenario. And Jonathan Green says, we're a nation of chokers.
Oh wow! I totally didn't hear that.
Yeah. I was like, whoa! Whoever was co-commentating with him, the current writer,
Scott Smart,
was that?
Scott Smart.
Scott Smart. That's right. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, we've gotten so close in the World Cup. We've gotten so close in this, that was harsh. And you know, JT, I think, did an amazing job. Both him and Biaggi. Biaggi also got involved in that incident. He was, ended up rejoining in 15th place.
Right.
And the two of them ended up, you know, paired up together, and they ended up finishing 6th and 7th. So they really, really, fought hard.
Yes, yes,
at the end of that race, you know, and remember, JT was starting from pole position also. So at the end of that race, he was still looking like, okay, all he has to do is, you know, finish ahead of Haga or somewhere close to Haga and he can win. What happens in the second race? Haga gets the whole shot. JT's like in eighth position. And we've got another incredible thing happening because now if JT finishes ninth or low or further back, he's going to lose the championship.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if he finishes in eighth, he gets 8 points. Haga gets 25. They would be tied on points, but JT would have one extra win or two extra wins or something like that.
Right.
So it was just a edge of the seat, you know, watching these guys. And he basically lucked out, I have to say, because a couple of guys in front of him, one guy had a DNF, one guy fell. And then he ended up getting passed by Bayless, which I just wanted to mention. This was to me like the epitome of like sportsmanship. Bayless, who was in the previous race knocking fairings with Corser, like literally they were bouncing off each other.
Yeah, it's true.
Is coming up to JT. He knows this guy is fighting for his championship, and Bayless has a much better pace than JT. He caught up to him within a few laps, and but he waited two laps to pass him. He was waiting for the perfect time to make sure that Tosland was not going to get, you know, knocked around or surprised or anything like that. I just thought it was such a gentlemanly thing to do.
Do you think that was what it was, really?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he sat behind him. As soon as he got past him, he just took off again, and he was out of view.
Yeah, because, yeah, they were. You know? That race they had at Vallelunga the previous week was just, it was insane, the amount of contact in that race. And
it was really wild.
Oh, yeah, that was, and it was good stuff. I mean, it was just...
Those guys don't mess around.
No. World Superbike might be, to a certain extent, where the MotoGP riders go to die, but it's also it's a good series. It's been improving. I do think, you know, even though the faults with the spec tire in there, I think it helped that series. It breathed new life into that series.
Yeah, and I also just want to say, like Nori Haga did everything. I mean, can you do any more? I mean, he won both races last weekend.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of what ifs. I was talking to a friend of mine this morning, actually, just all the what ifs that happened. You know, you had that big accident between Max and when Max took out Haga and what was it, in Donington?
Was that Donington or no? It was
No, it was
the one in Italy.
Yeah, that's right. It was at Misano.
Was it Misano? Yeah, it was Misano. Yeah, and yeah. So San Marino.
If it wasn't for that, he could have been a champion. But of course, then like Bayless has crashed in the beginning. So you know, there was a lot of
been a lot of ups and downs in that sport.
But the thing is, I don't know if. I mean, I've been watching Haga since 97. He's one of my favorite riders. He's definitely my favorite rider in World Superbike, and it was just kind of heartbreaking because he did everything he could possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is maybe the closest he'll ever come to being a World Superbike champion.
Well, he has his ride for next year, doesn't he?
What's that?
He has his ride.
Well, he has, of course. So. But, you know.
I know. You're right. Next year is going to be a whole new next year.
I think next year we're going to see the 1098s, and then 1098s is going to be Ducati Cup again.
I agree. I was just going to get to that the tire rule has leveled things out, but that I'm a little worried for next year of what's going to happen because I think that the Flying Flamini brothers have had enough of seeing the Japanese bikes winning, and they're going to fix things up so that Ducati's up there on the top again. And I think that's a big shame, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But, you know, it remains to be seen, you know, exactly what will happen. It might still be, you know, who knows, it might be just as good as ever. And for all the big Ducati fans, you know, they've probably been somewhat disappointed that we haven't had a lot of Ducatis winning. And I do...
Well, you know, Bayless won 7 races.
Yeah.
What's that? This year? Yeah, it was Tosin won 8 and...
Oh, wow. Christ.
And Bayless won 7 and then Haga won 6. So,
right.
You know...
So it's fairly evenly divided there. Yeah, yeah. Honda, Yamaha, yeah. And Ducati. I didn't realize he'd won that many races. I follow World Superbike, but I do it on a race per race basis. I like to watch it. Plus, they've had so many huge gaps this year of, yes. You know, let's take 6 weeks off. And, you know, so it's sort of easy to kind of forget. And the other thing, the other complaint, and I bitched about this last week, and I'm going to bitch it about it again because I think it's total crap, is, you know, you've got a series, a good series that's racing. It's top-notch stuff. It's quite popular. You see a lot of activity of motorcycle racing.
It's the freaking final.
The final series. And the championship is down to the final round, and Speed TV can't show it even on the same weekend? That not even one race. I mean, for the last couple rounds, they showed race one of the Superbike, the World Superbikes, on Sunday, and delayed race two until Tuesday. This last go-round where they're at Manicur, they put both races on Tuesday. So they're talking about the results of the race on Sunday night on their Speed Report show and on Wind Tunnel or whatever. Maybe I didn't watch Wind Tunnel that week, so I don't know. But whatever. And the race hasn't even been broadcast on Speed. And that's crap. And I know that somebody somewhere from Speed is listening to this show, or somebody will tell them at least or whatever. And you can tell them I said that. So
fix it, damn it. Jesus.
Yeah, it's bad enough that we have to wait so long for the 125s and this and that and the other in MotoGP. Okay, fine. But you're talking that, you know, World Superbike, the you know, the top class of the World Superbike series, and they can't put it on the same weekend because you got to show, you know, how many reruns of Pimp My Ride or whatever the hell they show there. Call their stupid shows. So whatever. Okay, enough Speed rambling. But
that's all right.
It just breaks my heart. You know, I think about it, and you hear about it so much. You remember a few years ago when Speed used to show the truck races and stuff? And it just, you know, you'd actually see racing on Speed. And I think about it, or Speed Vision back in the day. And, right. And it is. It's just a bummer. And there's supposed to be a new network coming out. And I hope they get it off the ground. Well, we've gone on for an hour. I think it was a fun conversation. It's always fun talking to you, Jules. And I think that we need to... probably wrap the call up because we're going to have some other stuff going on in the show, including me learning how to talk. And so, you know, we'll probably call it a day on this one. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us, Jules. Do appreciate it. Love your insight. And it's always good to have somebody to bounce ideas off of and chit-chat with.
Cool deal, Bob.
Coolio, again. And again, thank you very much for all your help. Thank you to everybody, but, you know, especially Jules, Jim, all you guys out there that it helped so much with everything. I do really, really do appreciate it. And the MotoGPOD would not be at 100 episodes if it wasn't for help from all the guys like you.
And all the listeners, too.
Yes, definitely. All the listeners out there, too. You are right. So, all right. We'll talk to you later, Jules.
Okay. Ciao.
Bye.
Hi, this is Toby Moody. I listen to Bob Hayes on MotoGP OD wherever I am in the world through the podcast. Stay tuned.
Hi, Bob. Scott Jones here to say congratulations on 100 shows. MotoGP OD adds so much to my enjoyment of motorcycle racing. I really appreciate the podcast and all the work that you put into it. I always enjoy hearing from Liam, and your conversations with Jules are great, and you continue to get fantastic interviews like the ones with Toby Moody and Chuck Axlin. Mark Brax were really good. I remember Jules talked to Colin Edwards while you were gone. It's just great to get to hear from people like that. So keep up the fantastic work, and I look forward to the next 100 shows.
I'm Brian Drever, and you're listening to the 100th MotoGP OD podcast. I'm okay with that.
Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming Malaysian Grand Prix, the full-on name of which, of course, escapes me right now, but it's something very long. And basically, it's the Grand Prix in Malaysia. This is going to be a good one. Not exactly my favorite track. This is one of those Formula One Herman Tilke-designed, somewhat faceless clone trekkie things going on. And with a two giantly long straights, which is actually kind of cool, and the incredibly ugly parasol sort of grandstandy thing they've got going on down the middle. But from the Yamaha press release, which is the best source of sort of setup kind of interesting bits that they have in their press release, Kawasaki writes the best press releases as far as sort of just the kind of general floweriness and flow, and this is cool. But Yamaha has the best press releases as far as actually telling you anything. And one of the things they say in here, because I'm just going to go ahead and read this from the press release rather than actually doing my own research, Sepang is one of the widest tracks on the calendar, measuring 16 meters across in some areas, and high track temperatures are always a factor in the tropical climate. With four
major hairpins and some fast and frequent changes of directions in its 5.52-meter layout. 5,542-meter layout. Sepang provides a stern workout for the entire bike setup, and its largely consistent, if demanding, climate makes it the ideal winter testing venue. However, after being completely resurfaced since preseason testing back in February, the teams will have to wait until the first free practice on Friday morning to see how useful their previous data will be for setup this weekend. And speaking of that, we have the results from Free Practice 1, because as we record this, Free Practice 1 has already happened. And I was going to mention all of the times and sort of things for the Malaysia Grand Prix, so if you've listened this long to the entire show, you get to know the times. It's going to be broadcast in the United States on Speed TV, tape delayed, of course, there's a shocker, on Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, which is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central and 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time or Daylight Time or whatever we're on right now. So on Sunday, if you're going to watch it on TV, 3 p.m. Pacific. However, if you want to watch it live, and I encourage you to do so, especially if you have the MotoGP.com subscription, it's relatively cheap. They're running a special where you can get some kind of two races for the price of one or something along those lines. Check out MotoGP.com for details on that. Watch it live. You can participate in the chat room that's on MotoGPOD.com and RideOn2.com, which unfortunately I won't be there this weekend. I have a Navy weekend, but Jules will be there. Jim Race is almost always there. There's all kinds of other people, and it's a whole lot of fun to do the chat thing while you're watching the race. You can just sort of say, wow, look at that, you know, that kind of thing. And the race actually occurs at midnight on Saturday night Pacific time, which translates into 3 a.m. in the morning on East Coast. So if you're in the United States, 3 a.m. in the morning, East Coast, come on, you can do it. Either stay up real late or get up real early, one of the two, and go to MotoGP.com, and as provided you have paid for the service, you can watch the race live. You can also get live timing going on, which is actually a very cool feature, and you don't even have to pay for that. Although trying to figure out what's going on from the race just by watching the timing screen, extremely difficult. So I wouldn't advise that, but if you can possibly swing it, I encourage you to check it out live on MotoGP.com. Of course, if you have Speed, you must tune your television to Speed during that time so that they get the ratings, even if you've already watched the race, just to make sure that they continue to have the races online. Let's talk a little bit about those free practice results. Like I said, I've got the one from Free Practice 1, the first free practice at the Polini Malaysian Motorcycle Grand Prix in Sepang, Malaysia. And shocker, first fastest guy, Casey Stoner. Second fastest, Danny Pedrosa. Then third, Nicky Hayden. How far off is Hayden? Now, this is Free Practice 1. These times are meaningless, but it's a good sort of a gauge. It's kind of fun. You get to see what's going on, see who's out there fastest and everything. I think Hayden's got something to prove after Australia. He was doing real, real well, like Toby said earlier on in the show, and he would have done well, and it was just a bummer that his engine done blowed up. So he's going to want to win he's going to want to do well in Malaysia. However, at the first free practice, his gap from Stoner was 1.198 seconds. So he's way off the pace from Stoner. However, everybody is. Stoner's out there by himself. He's demonstrating again his prowess with that motorcycle, and he set a lap time of 204.542. That was more than half a second faster than Pedrosa in the second spot, and like I said, well over a second faster than Nicky Hayden in the third spot. Now, this is just Free Practice 1. Again, meaningless times. Everybody's all over the map, but got John Hopkins fourth, Randy Dupinier with the naked torso chest in fifth, Alex Barros on the Primec Dantin is sixth, that's cool. Valentino Rossi in seventh, look for him to improve big time. Loris Caparossi also will most likely improve, is in eighth. Ant West in ninth, hopefully his dad's doing all right. 10th, Marco Melandri. 11th, Christopher Mullen. He probably might step up a little bit, but you never know. Nabuatsu Aoki, wild card rider for Suzuki, is in 12th, right behind Vermeulen. Let's see what his gap is. 4/100ths behind Vermeulen, so Vermeulen better be feeling the heat on that one. 13th spot, Tony Elias. 14th, Carlos Checa. 15th, Colin Edwards. Colin. 16th spot, Shinya Nakano. 17th, Curtis Robert. 18th, Makoto Tomata. 19th, Chaz Davis. And 20th, Sylvain Guintoli. There must have been something going on there, although he did do 18 laps, but he sure sucked. So it's good news there. Curtis Roberts, 17th, ahead of three riders. That's nice. But whatever, free practice one. Like I said, results are meaningless. So that's going to do it for today's show, with the one final exception. If you've listened to the show for this long, if you've listened to the 100th episode of MotoGPOD, you'll get to find out a little bit of my lack of organization. And I had an email that I had sitting on the stack of emails that I wanted to read during the previous segment of email, and I could, through the magic of editing, go in there and just read it now, but instead I'm going to give it to you now. And this was sent in by AJ Engel, longtime listener of MotoGPOD. He sent me quite a few emails. I think he's quite a young guy. And this is from the BBC Sport website, and I haven't seen this one everywhere else other than just sort of a rerun of the BBC Sport, but basically the gist of it is, and here's the headline: Rossi is unhappy with the Yamaha effort. Valentino Rossi has issued an ultimatum to his Yamaha team after missing out on the MotoGP crown for a second season. He was second fastest in qualifying for Sunday's Australian MotoGP, with Honda, Stanley Pedrosa on pole, and 2007 title winner Casey Stoner third. Blah, blah, blah. Five-time champion Rossi said, "Yamaha have to show me something now. Make a good bike for 2008. If nothing changes, this is the key, I can look for another opportunity." Rossi's contract with Yamaha runs out after the 2008 season. He won every crown from 2001 to 2005, three times with Honda, twice with Yamaha, and what's unsaid is that now he's disgruntled and he's not winning. He added, "I gave a lot of success to Yamaha in these past years. Now I wait for something from them. If we want to win the title again, then we need the people in Japan to put in more effort. We need to be more aggressive and brave in the development decisions." And then there's some other stuff. So that story there, depending upon how much it is true, is could be all sorts of things. I really don't know. It could be usual Rossi mind game posturing in the press, that by saying these things, he's going to somewhat light a fire under Yamaha a little bit and get them going. I don't know. I don't think it's entirely fair. I'm sure that the Yamaha factory effort is cranking it out as hard as they can. They may have been caught slightly flat-footed in some ways or another, but it's a new year, and a lot of it is due to the Michelin tires. There's so many factors going on. So for Rossi to say these things is a tiny bit unfair, I do believe. And I do think that it is somewhat political statements, mind games, stuff along those lines rather than actual stuff. But it has been speculated that Rossi would very much like to ride for an Italian company, and we all know that that would be Ducati. So for 2009, are we going to see Rossi ride in red? We might. You never know. I think we're going to have to wait till next year to find out. And of course, your coverage of that is going to be on MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Boy, talk about the magic of editing.
Hey, Bob. Jules Cheesick, a.k.a. Pop Monkey here. MotoGPOD was the very first podcast I ever listened to. And now, in a world where podcasts are a dime a dozen and major players have entered the game, MotoGPOD is still the best. So thanks for your professionalism, dedication, and style. And also thank you for the beer and smokes. Ciao.
Hey, that's going to do it for the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. Kind of looking through my notes here, I think I covered pretty much everything I wanted to cover. I do, however, want to say again, a big, big thank you to all the listeners out there, to all of the people that have been on this show, whether they're just fans or they're involved in MotoGP or whatever, all the people who've sent in emails, Chris Johnham at Road Racer X for giving my first mention in print, all sorts of cool stuff. I really appreciate it. It is a cool thing. I'm proud to have gotten to 100 episodes, and I'm thankful to you out there for listening to the shows. And other than that, I think we're really about done. I don't want to get too sappy and snivelly and all of that sort of stuff, but whatever. We'll be here for a while longer. Not 100% sure if it's going to be another 100 episodes or not, but we will see. You can certainly count on quite a few more as we watch MotoGP racing. We've got two races left this season. It's going to be good stuff. Championships decided, sure thing, but each race can stand on its own as an exciting event. And you've got Malaysia and Valencia, one of the best races of the season, coming up. So it's kind of cool. MotoGP is pretty much the last series out there. I think Formula One's doing their last round this weekend. And other than that, the motorcycle series are pretty much all stopped. So we're about done. And other than that, I will talk to you a lot next week. Keep the shiny side up, rubber side down. If you're still riding out there in the rain and all that, be careful one way or the other, and we will talk to you later. You thought that because this is the 100th episode and everything, you might get a funny, cool disclaimer, something imaginative and different and things like that, where I sort of try to think of something to make it a little bit easier to swallow that I'm just saying that MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes and I am solely responsible for its content and apparently can't read very well. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL in any way, shape, or form, and Carmela Espelita has not yet contacted me to offer a job. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them, but thank you very much to all of you that helped me out.